The following program, Normal Show Live, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate for the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate or encourage any illegal activity and advise all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws by visiting normal.org, N-O-R-M-L.org. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers of Normal Show Live are their own and do not necessarily reflect the philosophy and policies of Normal. Listener discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization.
And I think we need to rethink and criminalize our marijuana laws.
To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws presents. Normal Show Live, Marijuana Nation. Now, here's your host, Normal's Outreach Coordinator, Radical Russ Belville.
Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back. It is Monday, July 19th, 2010, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for joining us for the next 60 minutes of news, talk, interviews, information, music, comedy, and more by, for, and about the cannabis community. We're coming to you live and direct from beautiful Potland, Oregon, and Rolla J Studios, the home of the 2010 Normal National Conference in September 9th through 11th. Also, we are so excited and happy to have joining us back here in the studio, the pirate, Ganja John.
Arrgh. Arrgh. I am patch laden for those of you who can't see me.
Yes, John is back after having the eye removed, and we've got the eye patch. I understand you got the custom eye patch on the way.
Custom eye patch, leather eye patch with a green leather cannabis leaf.
Oh,
on the way.
Oh, that's so
cool.
My
birthday was last Sunday, and that's what my wife found someone up in Canada who make custom eye patches. That's all they do.
That's all they do is custom eye patches?
Custom leather eye patches.
Wow.
Which is awesome. So,
yeah, yeah, Slick Rick will have nothing on you, man.
Nothing.
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 Also joining us in our virtual studio in beautiful Astoria, Oregon, although not so beautiful today, my good friend and half sister, Cannabis Carrie.
Oh, I think it's gorgeous when it's like this, so I will have to disagree with you there.
Oh, it's gray and cold. I don't know.
I love it.
It's like 65 degrees out here in the middle of July. What's going on?
Well, I was just going to say it's probably the high percentage of pirates that come from Canada is why they need so many eye patch producers.
Oh, yeah.
Arr.
Those Canadian weed pirates.
Before we get too far started in the show, I've got to take some time right now to address a complaint that we received here at Normal Show Live. This one came on from Friday's show, Carrie, and it's all your fault.
All Carrie's fault. I actually heard this whole thing, and it is 100% Carrie's fault.
So I just wanted to say something to the folks out in the chat room, first of all. Normal Show Live is primarily a radio show. This is here to provide information and dissemination of information and analysis of policy and such, and a look at the fun side of the cannabis community as well. We have a chat room, and we have cams, but that's not the primary focus of the show. So if you get too upset about what's going on in chat, let me just say, lighten up. Let me give you an idea of some of the stuff we go through. First of all, it's not like I'm making a mint here working at Normal Show Live, and both John and Carrie volunteer at least 15 hours a week for no pay here. I've got the email. I forwarded it to you, Carrie. We're called fascists. Let me see what else here. Yes, we're fascist because we kicked a person out of the chat room. We have poor attitudes.
Oh, dear.
What else here? It's just the person just went on and on.
I believe I have a very poor attitude.
So we love you, Chatters. We love having you here on the show, but don't take it so seriously.
We love most of
you. Hey, where did I come in on this part?
Oh, well,
I was just wondering.
This person had posted a link, and then you PM'd them to say that they couldn't post links, and then they PM'd back at you and then said something rude.
I'm going to have to say that never happened. I had no PM conversations with anybody on Friday or last week since we've been
That's
back.
Awesome.
So.
All right.
Well, somebody thought it was you, you know.
You can check out the emails, Carrie. I've got them forwarded to you. And
sure.
Keep them coming, folks. Stash@normal.org. Sometimes they're pretty amusing. I would say if you are going to insult us, please try to use spell check. Carrie, if you could tell us what's going on in our hemp headlines today.
Well, sure. This week we've been telling you who is behind and who is backing the Prop 19 down in California. Today I'm going to tell you about someone who's not. Also, we're going to head out to Hawaii because it looks like the marijuana minister, Roger Christie, is in trouble again. And there's one federal agency that actually had started to thaw on its stance about cannabis and particularly medical marijuana, and they have switched their mind or changed their minds. So I'll tell you about that switch as well.
All right. Thanks, Carrie. And that news on Prop 19, we'll be getting more into Prop 19 today on the show in the Radical Rant at 45 after the hour. I'm going to give you a word-for-word analysis of the language in the initiative, because we're hearing so many people that are offering all these opinions about why you shouldn't vote on it, and most of them, it seems, haven't actually read the legislation. So I'll give you the analysis and tell you why it's so important to vote for legalization, as if I have to tell people listening to the show that it's important to vote for their own freedom. At half past, we're going to get into some cannabis conversations with another political initiative. Anthony Johnson from I-28 in the state of Oregon is here to talk about them getting on the ballot to provide a medical marijuana dispensary system right here in Oregon. This is pretty breaking news here, and Anthony will be here to tell us how that initiative would work and what the prospects are for getting it passed. And today is Roots Monday for our Daily Toker Tune. We're going to head down south of the border for Yo Sembraba Marijuana from Los Capos de Mexico. All that and more coming up here on Normal Show Live.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
It's a kite, everybody.
This drug in front of me is what they call marijuana.
If we had a dime for every dime bag bought in America, marijuana would be legal by now. Donate to Normal at NORML.org and support Normal Show Live.
I'm going to light.
Roll a big fatty.
Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, consumer cannabis. It's time for this week's Normal News with Cannabis Carrie.
The California State Democratic Party on Sunday decided not to endorse Prop 19, the marijuana legalization initiative that would allow adults access to marijuana. The party did decide to adopt a neutral position on Prop 19, leaving Democratic committees free to endorse the measure on a local level if they choose, or not to. After a fiery debate before the swift vote, it was clear that although the party decided ultimately that a yes vote could damage statewide candidates in some competitive races, most of the Democrats in the hotel meeting room intended to vote yes at the ballot box. The main fear within the party was that an endorsement of Proposition 19 would compromise candidates Jerry Brown and Barbara Boxer, who have already come out against the measure. Steve Preminger, who heads the Democratic Central Committee for Santa Clara County, said the efforts of the party is to get the ticket elected. The party's executive board, which includes elected officials and party representatives from across the state, voted 101-85 against an endorsement. But the Democrats, despite taking a cautious stance, appeared solidly behind the initiative, cheering and whooping much more raucously for the pro-endorsement speakers. Robert Cruikshank, the policy director for the Courage campaign, which backs progressive causes, called the vote in hopes that the party would not follow the party committee's recommendation to adopt the neutral position. His efforts are motivated by getting younger voters to the poll in this off-year election. Well, with or without the Democratic Party in endorsement. I believe the young voters will probably show up anyway. What do you think, Russ?
Well, sorry, Russ. Actually, I was going to play a fish flip-flopping around on a dock, but I didn't have that noise ready.
Yeah, we're missing that sound effect from the library. Well, you know, here's the thing. The Democrats are slitting their own throat here if they appear to be in opposition to Prop 19. And it's not going to be too much longer before Republicans start to get whiff of this. First of all, New Mexico's former governor, Gary Johnson, is a Republican hopeful for the 2012 presidential nomination. And he is adamantly against the war on drugs and vehemently for at least the decriminalization of marijuana and possibly even the legalization. I think he came out in favor of Prop 19, as a matter of fact, so I'm pretty sure he's for the legalization of cannabis. Pretty soon, the small government, fiscally conservative, mind-your-own-business Republicans are going to get whiff of the idea that the Democrats are weak on this issue, and they can steal away some of their younger voter base, some of their more progressive voter base, if they come up with a states' rights attitude toward marijuana for all people. It's going to happen. You mark my words, Republicans are going to make hay out of this, pardon the pun, but it is going to happen. If they find a weakness, they're going to go for it. So Democrats, you're not making the smart political choice here in abandoning your natural constituency of young people, of people who are progressively minded and people who believe in privacy and medical rights and the Constitution. It's a big, big mistake, California, and you're going to see it in 2010 for the Democratic candidates that come out against Prop 19.
The man who headed the Hawaii Cannabis Ministry in Hilo, Hawaii, will have to await his trial behind bars. Roger Christie, the self-proclaimed marijuana minister, was arrested by federal authorities for a second time this year on July 8th and is now facing three counts of drug trafficking. The 61-year-old Christie claims that he uses cannabis for religious purposes. His attorney argued that because Christie was not a threat to society, he should be given a chance to post bond while awaiting his trial. U.S. Attorney Michael Kawahara disagreed, telling the judge that Christie and members of the THC ministry had been raided by federal authorities in March, but that they still didn't stop their illegal activities. The judge agreed, and now Christie, who is hoping to post bond, will remain in custody until his trial gets underway, a process that will likely take months. The bail hearing did reveal that the ministry had a price list for marijuana sales, or what it called a donation list. Federal authorities conducted wiretaps on the organization, and in one instance, an employee questions a fellow employee on what to do when a customer asks what the price is. The fellow employee says, just memorize it. Sounds like an uphill battle for the Minister of Marijuana, Russ.
Boy, every time this subject comes up, I always have to start my rant with a standard disclaimer. I believe in everyone's religious right to use cannabis. I certainly believe that Ethiopian Coptic Christians and Rastafarians and, hell, even just you sitting there with your own copy of the Bible, believing what Genesis 1:29 says in plain print, completely. I am completely for that religious use. I completely believe in your sincerity. However, let's talk about Roger Christie and the THC ministry. First of all, when we talk about sacramental use religious use of a sacrament, it brings in to the mind of people things like Catholics' use of communion and wine, for example, right? You don't see the Catholic Church stockpiling cases and cases and tons of wine. You don't see the Catholic Church transporting large amounts of wine from place to place, and you don't see them inviting people in, offering them to place suggested donations for how much wine they're going to imbibe as a sacrament while on church grounds. Now, granted, that's Catholics. They can do their thing. You know, Rastafarians can do their thing. Like I said, religion, it's your right. First Amendment, I'm totally for it. But if you want to play this, oh, I was just praying defense, it's just part of my religion defense, it rings a little hollow when all of these very transparently commercial activities are going on around your sacrament. Second of all, another problem that I have with this THC ministry, if you want to join a church, if you totally believe that church and you believe that you can go to that church and use cannabis as sacrament and you want to sign away your life savings to that church, I'm cool with that. If you want to donate money to a church, again, First Amendment right, you can go right ahead and do so. What I have a problem with is when that church offers you a $250 kit and claims that that kit guaranteed will keep you out of jail, guaranteed will win a religious defense case. That's what I've got a problem with, because you're selling false hopes. You're selling fraud. And that's what I've got a problem with when it comes to these so-called THC ministries. It seems a whole lot, to me at least, that a lot of these ministries are just a guise for people who really like to smoke a lot of pot and want to get away with dealing as much as they can to their friends. And again, I'm for that too. I'm for Prop 19. I'm for commercial regulation of cannabis. I'm for people buying and selling. But let's not use a religious excuse to make that happen. Let's let religion be religion, and let's let commerce be commerce.
The dream of many cannabis activists is getting the stamp of approval for marijuana from a federal agency. Well, on April 1st of this year, the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office created a new trademark category, processed plant matter for medicinal purposes, namely medical marijuana. The Department of Commerce had even posted the new category on its website. Quietly, behind the scenes, dozens of people in the 14 states that allow medical marijuana began applying for trademarks for their products. Some people tried to stake claims on long-used names such as Maui Wowie, Kush, Purple Haze, and Acapulco Gold. Even the word chronic has ended up on a patent application. Other companies applied to trademark products made with cannabis, such as the application for Keef Cola. For 3 months, the applications piled up in the patent office, but that all came to an abrupt end last week after patent office lawyers questioned whether trademark applicants with medical marijuana products and services can establish lawful use in interstate commerce. With that, the office removed the new cannabis classification last Friday. Spokesperson Peter Pappas said that the creation of the category was a mistake, and now they have removed it. He said that the patent office will go back to its pre-April policy of accepting pot trademark applications, but without providing a specific category for them. Even though they have received hundreds of applications that would have applied to the new category, the office has never actually granted a trademark for cannabis or any cannabis-related product. And Pappas said that it would be highly unlikely that they would in the future. Companies like Harborside Medical, who have several trademark applications, say that they will still vigorously pursue their claims until they are awarded full protection status for their intellectual property. Others that were seeking the recognition of the patent office are trying a different approach. Scott Van Rixel, a New Mexico chocolatier who had applied for the trademark Bang the Original Cannabis Chocolate, says he now plans to withdraw his original patent application under the medical marijuana category and plans to seek a trademark for a chocolate product that just happens to contain cannabis as an ingredient. Entrepreneurs are now turning in to law firms specializing in intellectual property rights to see if they can push the matter further. The fight for some kind of federal recognition in this well-established market will no doubt continue.
Wow, what an interesting little quirk in the law there. I can understand where the trademark office is coming from. If it's something that cannot be sold in interstate commerce, then what's the point of the federal government, whose purview is interstate commerce, putting a trademark on it? So I can see that kind of strange little twist in the law. Of course, we'd like our businesses to be able to trademark their products like any other business does, but that federal prohibition still remains kind of the problem. It's also important for people to understand the difference in what we're talking about between trademarks and patents. Of course, a trademark is just a commercial name that you use for some product you sell. Frosted Flakes, Corn Flakes, those kind of things, they all have trademarks on them from their, cereal companies that use their name and don't want other companies to get rich, stealing their name. But a patent is a registration of some new invention. And that leads me to talking about the federal government's patent number 6630507. You can look it up on patentstorm.us. The federal government actually has a patent on cannabinoids as antioxidants and neuroprotectants. So this federal government that says there is no such thing as medical marijuana and it's not commercially available interstate-wise, so we can't trademark it, still doesn't have a problem with patenting something that is illegal federally and not being able to trade across state lines. So that chocolatier who's going for the patent idea, he may be onto something there, because obviously the federal government's going to stick by allowing patents for cannabinoids and cannabinoid-based substances. I imagine that a lot of these purveyors here in California could register with the state. I believe there is a level of state trademarks that you can go with, and I'm sure Harborside and those other people have been pursuing that. But again, it doesn't protect you on the federal level. You know, as soon as another state, you know, Michigan or New Jersey or any of these states that get dispensaries up and running, they could go ahead and use those names that are being used in California because the California protection wouldn't cover them.
You'd get 14 different companies making Keef Cola.
14.
Same logo.
Yeah.
You know, in different states. So.
Yeah, it's just massive confusion. It's such a huge industry that, you know, the federal government eventually is just going to have to wake up to the commercial potential of this market and regulate it like it does any other substance, like it does alcohol, like it does alfalfa, for that matter. We've got to get this commercially regulated, or it's just going to end up being highly confusing, lead to a ton of court cases. It's just going to get worse before it gets better, folks. There's going to be a lot of these things we're going to have to wade to, a lot of the minutiae in the law that needs to be cleared up. Oh, it's time to take that special magical break. Ganja John's here.
I am here.
We're going to have ourselves a good break. We'll be right back after this.
It's 20 after the hour, and we have to take a short break, if you know what I mean. Please support these sponsors who support Normal Show Live.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would send you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
And now, a message from former President George W. Bush to remind the American people of our responsibility in our nation's war on certain American citizens, non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
That's right, America, use less drugs. Put down the Prozac, the Vioxx, and the Levitra, and turn to the herb. Use less drugs. Our national policy is no longer just say no, it's now just slow down.
You get me too high. I overanalyze. If you've ever been too high, then you can sympathize. You get me too high. I've said some silly thing, and that's the reason why.
It's time for your Daily Toker Tunes, the best in 420-friendly music from all genres that uplifts, entertains, and informs the public. Our PodSafe music is donated by freedom-loving musicians who support our goal of ending adult marijuana prohibition. Today we bring you tunes for Roots Monday, our celebration of the music that evolved into the popular modern music of today. We pick the best of blues, country, folk, and jazz with a 420 feel and serve it up for you every Monday. Brought to you by PlanetFantastic.com and Bella Blue Tie-Dye Fashions. If you'd like to submit your song to be played on Normal Show Live, send it to us at stash@normal.org. Now, here's some great independent marijuana music for today's Daily Toker Tunes.
Buenos tardes, señores y señoritas. Soy Radical Russ. Hoy, mi hermana. Kind of scary.
What I posted today. Well, last week we played some Rebetika, which is a musical style from Greece that often celebrates cannabis culture among the working class. Well, today we get to hear a sample of Narcocorridos music, the controversial music from Mexico. If you can remember, earlier this year we brought you a news story about the efforts of lawmakers south of the border to outlaw this style of music. Narcocorridos music is a musical style that often glorifies marijuana culture from the point of view of the Mexican marijuana dealer or smuggler. It back to the 1950s, where the music typically told a story about a contrabandista, someone who smuggled contraband. You might say that narco corridos is like gangster rap, but with accordion-based polkas. So today's tune is from Los Capos de Mexico, a fresh-faced group of young men with cowboy hats and matching outfits. And the song is called Yo Sembraba Marijuana, which translates to I Planted Marijuana. If Mexico's ruling party, the National Action Party, had their way, their proposed legislation would mean a sentence of up to 3 years for performing this very song, Russ.
Muchas gracias, Cannabis Carrie.
So we need matching outfits, Russ. Yeah. Matching hemp outfits.
Es Daily Toker Tunes, Roots Monday. La música es Yo Sembraba Marihuana para Los Campos de México.
Allá entre las montañas, soy de tierras guerrerenses. Yo sembraba marihuana para engordar a mis peces. Los gringos me la compraban con puros billetes verdes. Logré muy buenas cosechas, ya maíz casi no sembraba. En las suficientes tierras, pa' sembrarla y cosecharla. Solo así hice un billete, hay bajitas las tenazas. Yo sembraba marihuana, no me rajo, fue muy cierto. Yo nunca me las quemaba, yo se la vendí a los güeros. Ganaba muy buena lana cuando era marihuanero. Los yo exportaba mis cosechas directo hasta el extranjero. Cargaba las avionetas con puros costales llenos. A veces me pagaban las pacotas de dinero. Quisieron ponerme el dedo los guachos ahí en la tierra, pero yo ya estaba lejos. Me fui para nuevas tierras, si no ya estuviera muerto pintando mi calavera. Yo sembraba marihuana, no me rajo, fue muy cierto. Yo nunca me las quemaba, yo se la vendía a los güeros. Ganaba muy buena lana cuando era marihuanero.
Ay, mi español es muy mal. Soy Radical Russ. La música es Yo Sembraba Marihuana para Los Campos de México. Gracias, Cannabis Caddy.
It's 420 somewhere.
Time to check Normal's cannabis community calendar, which you can find at normal.org/calendar. Today, Monday, July 19th, Medical Marijuana Certification Clinic will be at the Muskegon Normal headquarters on Sherman Boulevard in Muskegon, Michigan. For more information, check out the calendar of events, normal.org/calendar. On Tuesday, July 20th, the weekly medicating events taking place at the Phoenix Cafe in Hazel Park, Michigan. Kalamazoo Area Compassion Club is meeting at Charlie's Place in Kalamazoo, Michigan. You can check them out at KalamazooAreaCompassionClub.org. And in Albuquerque, New Mexico, Hemp TV is on the air. You can call 505-880-0666 for tickets to the show. On Wednesday, July 21st, Cincinnati's Fountain Square Reggae Night is taking place. We're going to be playing a game of Weeds, the card game, and visiting with friends at Miami Valley Normal. For information, check out info at mvnormal.org. Benzie County Normal will be meeting in Benzonia, Michigan on Wednesday. Wednesday. For information, contact Reverend Steve at 231-882-4496. They always meet on the third Wednesday of every month for a potluck dinner and movie. A Grand Traverse Compassion Connection meeting is taking place in Grandview Parkway, Traverse City, Michigan. Check out gtcompassionconnection.org for information. And also on Wednesday, Tulsa Normal in Tulsa, Oklahoma will be meeting at the Hardesty Regional Library. For more information on all of these events, including email addresses, phone numbers, websites, and more, check out Normal's Cannabis Community Calendar at normal.org/calendar.
Starfish Designs, makers of the original Gandalf.
I'm Radical Russ, and when I want to relax, I always have my 17-inch-long original Gandalf from Starfish Designs nearby. The hand-blown borosilicate glass is strong and easy to clean, and the design is sleek and sophisticated. Starfish Designs are available from Bend, Oregon at a glass retailer near you. For locations, call 541-788-GLASS. That's 541-788-4527.
I'm Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. Have you heard about the new super pot that's supposedly 20 times more potent than your father's Woodstock weed? Don't believe the hype. Marijuana's THC potency has always varied, even in the 60s and 70s. And the drug czar's numbers are full of, well, exaggerations. While no intoxicant is harmless, cannabis is non-toxic and far safer than alcohol. No matter how much you smoke, of whatever potency, you cannot die of a marijuana overdose. Potency is irrelevant anyway. More potent pot just means you smoke less of it, meaning less harmful smoke in your lungs. This is a prime example of harm reduction in action. Besides, the government already allows the prescription of THC pills. Its commercial brand name is Marinol, and it's 100% potent. Meanwhile, the federal government won't allow dying people to use natural marijuana, no matter what the potency. Does this make sense to you? Learn the facts about pot. Visit NORML.org today.
Legalization, decriminalization, lowest law enforcement priority, medical marijuana, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis, industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis that intersect nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare, the economy, global climate change, law enforcement and prisons, immigration, religion, free speech, energy policy, and war. Now we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our Normal daily audio stash, Cannabis Conversations.
Welcome back, everyone. 31 after the hour, and last week we broke the fantastic news that here in my home state, the state of Oregon, volunteers and activists have managed to place on the ballot Initiative 28, an initiative to create a regulated access and supply system for medical marijuana right here in the state of Oregon, something we've been doing without for a dozen years now, despite many opportunities to try to change that. So joining us to talk about it is one of the spokespeople behind the campaign, Anthony Johnson, speaking to us right here from Portland, Oregon. And Anthony, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much, Russ.
Glad to have you here. Did you ever get a number on exactly how many signatures were turned in and how many you beat the number by?
We had officially just over 130,000 signatures that were turned in. Just over 85,000 of those were valid. So we happened to get about 3,000 more valid signatures than were needed to be placed on the ballot.
Oh, everyone's really excited about this. The change is in the air. Of course, California is going forward with their Prop 19. Unfortunately, Washington was unable to get their initiatives on the ballot, but they saw a change this year that allowed doctors, naturopaths, and others, nurse practitioners, to be able to recommend for medical marijuana. It seems like the West Coast is the hub of the changes in marijuana policy, and Oregon's going to be playing right along with them. Tell folks about this regulated supply system and some of the basics of how it would work.
Yeah, so we are very excited to be adding to the momentum that we're seeing on the West Coast that will help shape medical marijuana law and marijuana law reform in general across the country from coast to coast. And the initiative that we have placed on the ballot will establish a regulated medical marijuana supply system in that it will allow for nonprofit dispensaries to dispense to patients and producers to produce for those dispensaries. It won't take away the right of a patient to grow their own or have someone grow for them. Both dispensaries and producers will pay licensing fees and fees equal to 10% of their gross revenue, and the program will fund medical cannabis research and establish a program to assist low-income homebound patients.
All right. So for people that are listening both here in the state of Oregon and from out of state who might be interested in getting involved and becoming one of these producers or suppliers, what are some of the costs they're looking at and some of the hoops they have to jump through?
Yes, you have to be registered with the state. It's a $1,000 licensing fee to become a producer. You do have to be an Oregon resident, and you have to be qualified and licensed from the Department of Human Services. The Department of Human Services has 6 months to implement the program, but currently you just have to be 21 years of age and not be convicted of drug trafficking felonies or violent felonies after the first of the year, and then you can be registered to grow marijuana for dispensaries.
Okay, I found my new job, Russ.
Yeah, I'm going to lose an engineer here. Now, with regards to that Oregon residency, this is important, as I know some people were afraid of the notion that if we set up a dispensary system in Oregon, the carpetbaggers would come, the Californians would come, they'd Californicate the state, and we'd end up with California-style dispensaries. What's your take on that? How do you dispel those fears?
Yeah, so we looked at what's going on in California, and to dispel some of those fears and also to prevent that, we established that producers must be Oregon residents and dispensaries must be nonprofit Oregon corporations. And also we have statewide regulation instead of county-by-county regulation or locality-by-locality regulation that you've seen in California. So California dispensaries, California growers won't be able to flood the Oregon market. They'll have to only be Oregon residents and Oregon nonprofits that will participate in this system.
Excellent. And, of course, we're all very excited about the fact that this protects the right of the growers who are currently growing for themselves or growing for patients, that it doesn't affect them. They're still allowed to do that. Of course, we saw New Jersey pass its medical marijuana law that instituted dispensaries, but then did not give patients the right to grow. So that's very important. You mentioned felonies, drug trafficking felonies, drug cultivation felonies. These would prevent you from becoming a licensed dispenser, but only after this law goes into effect, correct?
Correct. It's not ex post facto. It's not after the law. But the law has to be implemented first. If you're convicted after the fact, after the law, then that prevents you from being a grower. But previous convictions before implementation of the law do not count against you.
Right. And that only makes sense. People that are growing now medically could have gotten a felony from their grows before medical marijuana laws came into effect, or maybe even after if they went over limits somehow. This would not prevent them from becoming dispensary owners or producers for dispensaries.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, as we go forward from here, of course, the Oregon ballot has a lot of other measures that are playing out and other candidates that are up for election. As you're moving forward with the campaign, what is the plan for marketing this to Oregonians? There was a Measure 33 in 2004 that didn't manage to pass. What lessons did you learn from that? How are you going to better propose this to the Oregonians to get the yes votes you need to pass?
Yeah, Measure 33, which got 43% of the vote in 2004, was much more expansive than Initiative 28, and it would have revamped or reformed the entire medical marijuana law. It would increase how much medicine patients could possess. It added the medical professionals that could have signed patients up for medical marijuana cards. I think most damaging was a provision of that law that would have mandated that county health departments fund medical marijuana dispensaries, that that county didn't have a dispensary in it, so government money and government employees would be actually dispensing marijuana during a time of budget crunches and schools not having enough money. I think that was probably a very unpopular thing to propose. So we took what has pulled well historically in Oregon, and that is giving patients a safe place for them to get cannabis, a licensed and registered place, a dispensary similar to a pharmacy that patients can go and safely get their medicine so they're not forced to grow their own, they don't have to wait for a harvest, and they don't have to turn to the black market. And so we just established a safe place, licensed and regulated, and we think that when Oregon voters realize the benefits of this dispensary system, they will come out and vote favor of it. And so the root of the plan is to energize our base who may not be that energized to vote in 2010. Let them know this is a very important election, and while energizing our base about the benefits of the system, also educating and alleviating the fears of the elderly people or stay-at-home moms who may tend to vote against this, and let them know that this won't increase marijuana availability for children, this won't flood your neighborhoods with the pot shops that they hear about in other states like California. This is a highly regulated system. It'll get medicine to patients. It'll generate revenue for the state, and it won't change the framework of your neighborhood. Dispensaries are not allowed within 1,000 feet of the school. They're not allowed within purely residential areas.
So it sounds like a lot of the things that California is still trying to hammer out through very contentious meetings at city councils and county halls are things that you've already taken a look at and planned for in this initiative.
Yeah, definitely. We saw the problems that erupted in California due to no statewide regulation, and we implemented those initially, and we provided the Department of Human Services, who runs the Oregon Medical Marijuana Program now, to implement any necessary rules to operate the system. So we believe we've come up with a very tightly regulated system that will benefit patients, but also alleviate the fears of people who hear about things going on in California.
Now, moving forward, how does the poll look? Do you feel like you've got a large degree of support from the Oregon voters?
Voter Power, which operated a vast majority of the paid signature gathering commission funding in December of 2008, it showed the mega polling at 59%. We know the medical marijuana program polls even higher at 63%, and so if our people come out to vote, the chances of victory are looking very good. We hope to commission more polling after we get a measure number, after the financial impact statement comes out from the state of Oregon. We expect that this to be a revenue generator, and we think that'll be a very popular part of this dispensary initiative when voters go to vote this November.
And I think a lot of people overlook this as, a lot of people who are even anti-marijuana is, I think they should vote for this simply because it's going to create a lot of jobs in this state that's really hurting right now. A 10.5%,
unemployment
rate. And I look at California, and I didn't see this before, but going down to that High Times Cup, there's a lot of people working in marijuana down in California. A lot.
Are there any projections for that, Anthony, with regard to employment opportunities or how much this would contribute to the state?
The state is currently working on those numbers. OPB recently reported that a financial analyst, it was his estimate that the program would bring in $20 million in the first year. It's hard to determine exactly how many jobs this is going to create or the kind of money it's going to bring in, but we definitely know that it will bring in money, it will create jobs, and those that revenue and those jobs will only increase as the medical marijuana program grows, as people realize the benefits of medical cannabis, and we expect it to grow even more when people realize and learn that there is now a safe dispensary system for them to utilize.
Now, if I understand everything correctly in this measure, the licensed providers of cannabis, the so-called dispensaries, would only be able to purchase from the licensed producers, so you don't have the situation where just anybody could go and sell their product to the dispensaries. Am I correct on that?
That is correct. The one thing we wanted to do was to ensure medical marijuana patients and caregivers and activists that the Medical Marijuana Act, if you like what's going on now, if you have sufficient supply of medicine, if your relationship with your grower works fine, if you grow your own and it works for you, that won't change at all. And so we kept the current system separate from the new regulated system. And so it to alleviate some fears. And so, so not everybody will be able to sell at the dispensaries. You'll have to become a licensed producer and go through the regulations, the licensing fees, that are put in place for that.
Okay, one final question for Anthony Johnson. He's a spokesperson for Oregon's I-28, the Coalition for Patients' Rights, and that has to do with the money you spoke of, the price from the consumer's point of view. We've done numerous events in California and in Colorado as well, and we see the prices at the dispensary systems they have there mirroring the pretty much the price structure that you find on the street, $45 for a 4-gram eighth, for example, or $10 to $15 a gram for certain strains. Is there anything about the I-28 system that addresses these prices, or is that something that's just a function of prohibition in general and no initiative could fix it?
There's no doubt that prohibition causes extreme, problems, across the board and increases the price. We believe we've come up with a system to alleviate that price as much as possible, and we allow the market to really help keep those prices low. Producers will have to compete with each other for dispensary business, and dispensaries will have to compete with each other for business from the patients and their providers and caregivers who utilize those dispensaries. And so if anybody is gouging patients, has two extremely high prices, the market will be there to allow people to undercut them and to keep the price as low as possible. Recently, Paul Stanford has stated on his show, Cannabis Common Sense, that he would do all that he can to keep the prices low. And I think a lot of nonprofit organizations and concerned activists will do what they can to keep the prices as low as possible here in Oregon. And we think we set up a system that can do that. Granted, prohibition is a concern, also to help out low-income patients. Unlike any other state, this dispensary initiative mandates that a program be established for low-income patients. And so, patients who can't afford to spend money in dispensaries will be able to subsidize homebound patients and low-income patients who acquiring medicine has been such a difficulty.
I really hope you're right, Anthony, but, bringing access to the patients that can afford it is good as well. I hope that we've got this set up in such a way that we don't see the same problems of Colorado and California with regard to pricing. They've had 12 years and 14 years in California for the market to settle their prices, but it hasn't seemed to happen yet. I'm hoping the nonprofit aspect of this will make a difference, and thank you so much for the hard work you've done in fighting a lot of battles to get this on the ballot, and we will be supporting you and hoping that it passes come this November. Thank you, Anthony.
Thanks a lot, Ralph, and thanks for all the work that you do.
All right. When we come back, a little bit of radical ranting on Proposition 19. I'm rebutting all of the naysayers and giving you a word-for-word analysis of the actual initiative text itself. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Normal Show Live is brought to you by our advertisers and supported by the generous tax-deductible donations of our listeners. If you'd like to make a monetary donation to the show, visit secure.normal.org/donate, fill in the dollar amount, and specify Normal Show Live in the comments. If you'd like to donate equipment or items to be used for prize promotions on the show, please send them to 4110 Southeast Hawthorne Boulevard, number 161, Portland, Oregon, 97214. If you need a receipt for tax deduction purposes, please indicate the value of the items you are donating. Thank you for contributing to the fight for your own freedom.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Hey everybody, 47 after the hour, and I just wanted to take some time to talk a little bit about California's Prop 19, the initiative to tax and regulate cultivation, sales, and personal possession and use of cannabis in the state of California. I spent all weekend reading various blogs that have sprouted up in opposition to Prop 19. Now, you'd expect that from the cops, you'd expect it from the anti-drug people, the parents groups, but no, these are blogs written by so-called professional potheads, so-called stoners, against legalization. Really blows my mind. It kind of reminds me when Sam Kinison compared rock against drugs to Christians against Christ. I mean, stoners against legalization? Come on now. Now, some of the blogs are based on this notion that what we have now, you in California, what we have now is going to fail if we pass Prop 19. And of course, the notion there is that, well, if you smoke marijuana in California, of course you have a Prop 215 recommendation from a doctor, and Prop 19 will take those rights away from you. Well, guess what? Most marijuana smokers, believe it or not, are healthy, and they're not comfortable spending money for a doctor to give them permission to use cannabis. Some of them don't like the notion of deceiving a doctor or having to make up some story about why they want to use cannabis. Now, currently, those cannabis consumers in the state of California face a ticket, a fine, and a misdemeanor drug conviction record for possession of an ounce or less of cannabis. This conviction record can prevent us from getting student aid, can cost you jobs, child custody, and housing, or if you're on probation for something else, it can get you thrown back in jail. Now, I know some people will say, well, California is going to try to bring it back down from an infraction, misdemeanor to an infraction, and only be a $100 ticket and no drug conviction. But still, $100 is a lot of money to some people. And don't forget that we face a felony charge if we grow one plant at home. If we grow any cannabis, felony. So for a lot of us, Prop 19 is a whole lot better than what we have now. Now, another thing these blogs seem to be doing is spreading some outright confused misinformation. Things like talking about a $50 per ounce state tax. And if they tax it at $50 an ounce, it'll be so expensive that everybody will still sell it anyway for less than the tax. There is no $50 tax in Prop 19. That was Tom Ammiano's bill in the California Assembly to legalize marijuana, the one that didn't make it past committee, right? So it's not even in Prop 19. Another fear is that Prop 19 would supersede Prop 215. It would make 215 null and void. It wouldn't. Prop 19 even references Prop 215 in numerous spots and says, you have the right to an ounce in a 5x5 garden, except for what's allowed if you're a Prop 215 patient. So how could it supersede Prop 215 when it's giving you an exception to Prop 215? And then, of course, my favorite part, and this happens all the time when we're out here in these fringe elements of politics sometimes, you get the conspiracy theorists, you get the anarchists, you get the hate the government types that say, oh, well, what's going to happen is the millionaires are all going to take over and they're all going to create, there'll be a monopoly and they'll big corporations will come in and Philip Morris will buy all the land and they'll make really lousy weed that gets you addicted and it has all sorts of chemicals in it. It'll be terrible. Now, that always amuses me because Prop 19 specifically allows cities and counties to decide how they want to regulate the production and sales of cannabis for commercial use. So if you're in the Emerald Triangle, right, you're in Trinity, Humboldt, or Mendocino County, why wouldn't those counties come up with regulations that maintain their pot-growing economy? Why wouldn't the citizens of those counties come up with regulations that limit how much land a company could buy to keep Philip Morris out? Why wouldn't they set up regulations that say that the bud has to be grown organically or something like this? We're giving the political power to the very people you say it's taking the political power away from. It's so simple. And let's say Philip Morris does come in. Let's say a big company does come in and wants to produce a whole bunch of marijuana. If they do a good job of it, what's the problem with that? You know, you don't have to buy the Philip Morris swaggity swag. Some people might, and great, if they want to buy that product, fine for them. But there'll always be a market for good quality buds and the small-time farmers that grow them. Now, there are a couple sticking points in this, in Prop 19, that a lot of people are really worked up about. One of them has to do with minors below 21. Prop 19 does create a new crime if you're an adult over 21 and you are smoking where minors are present, right? They want to keep you from smoking around kids. And Prop 19 makes it a crime if you're an adult 21 or over to give marijuana to someone aged 18 to 20. Now, currently, it's just a citation. It's that ticket, right? So if I'm 21, I pass a joint to my 20-year-old friend, it's just a citation. After Prop 19, that's 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. But let's look at it this way. The penalty that they're proposing for 21 plus to pass to 18 to 20s is the exact same penalty as it is if you pass a beer to someone aged 18 to 20. So for all this time we've been saying, let's regulate pot like alcohol. There it is. That's regulating pot like alcohol. If you're 21 and over and you supply alcohol to someone 18 to 20, that's a misdemeanor, 6 months in jail and a $1,000 fine. So let's make that same standard for cannabis. Now, I don't particularly like it. I don't like anything that puts people in jail for cannabis. But remember, it's not the 18 to 20-year-old who goes to jail. It's the adult over 21 who's abusing his rights, the one who's abusing the privilege of using cannabis, who's going to jail. So that's a slight difference. They're trying to make it sound as if the 18 to 20-year-olds are going to get locked up. No, it's the adult who made the mistake that's going to get locked up. And this other thing about smoking in front of your kids, we get a lot of people like, oh, well, Prop 215 allows me as a parent to be in my house and using my medicine. Now, with Prop 19, they're going to burst into the houses and take away my kids because I was smoking my pipe in front of my five-year-old. Come on now. Really? That's how far you're going to go with this? Look, as long as you are minding your own business and you are fairly reasonable about your use, I don't think cops are going to be bursting in your house to take down legitimate Prop 215 patients for smoking in front of their kids. What this is designed to do is to end the situation where we have these open-air smoking festivals where adults and people below 18 are smoking at them. That's the idea. Because, newsflash, guess what? Most voters do not like the idea of kids smoking weed. This is just a political reality, folks. If I had my druthers, if I could wave a magic wand and make it all possible, I would make 18 the age for everything. I think if you're old enough to carry a rifle for Uncle Sam, by God, you're old enough to smoke a cigarette, drink a beer, and smoke a joint.
I'd make it 15. I mean, you know, but that's my opinion. That's not Normo's opinion.
Make it 15, whatever. But yeah, if I could wave a wand, it would be 18 for everything. But that's not going to happen. And the support for making cannabis available to people aged 18 ain't going to fly because too many of those 18-year-olds are still in high school. Right? So nobody's going to vote for that. Well, not enough people are going to vote for that. So it's a political reality that we have to put these things in these initiatives that make it serious, that make it show that we are serious about keeping cannabis away from young people. So even if you do have a problem with those things, is it enough to continue ruining the lives of people over the age of 21? Right? And if you're 18 to 20 years old and you're listening to me, wouldn't you love to be legal in 1 to 3 years? It's such a small thing here, a small portion of this thing. It's not perfect, but it is the best choice we've got in this election to stop arresting adults for cannabis. This is the biggest thing Prop 19 does. It's the forest for that the blogs are missing for the trees. It legalizes marijuana cultivation and possession. What you've got now under Prop 215, everybody's like, oh, it's so great, I'm a medical patient, I'm legal. No, you're not. You're not legal. You are exempted from criminal prosecution. It's a huge difference. You are guilty until proven patient in California, even in California. You are guilty until proven patient. After Prop 19, the adult cannabis consumer, medical or not, is innocent until proven guilty. It is a complete game changer for law enforcement because the smell of marijuana on your person is no longer probable cause to search you. A joint in your pocket means nothing. The seizure of stems, leaves, and seeds from your trash is irrelevant. A couple of baggies with weed residue in them are just garbage. The sight of a bong on your table visible through a kitchen window isn't a welcome mat for a police search. Your utility bills raising a bit for water and lights don't matter. Your neighbor's smelling skunky plants is just a nuisance, not the source for an anonymous tip. Receipts for lights, soil, fertilizer, ballast, trimmers, and stuff are meaningless. Infrared signatures of your home aren't evidence of anything. Marijuana-sniffing canine units are out of a job, and, best of all, in my opinion, pre-employment drug testing programs become harder for businesses to maintain for cannabis.
Hallelujah.
There is all sorts of things in this initiative you don't know about, and that the backers of this initiative can't come right out and say, lest they give away this to law enforcement for their ads. But let me tell you a few secrets. Come around close here. Come real close here. Let me tell you about this. In Prop 19, they've got some specific language that says that employers may still may retain the right to prevent cannabis use that creates actual impairment on the job. Got that? What they've just sneakily done is defined it so that marijuana metabolites are not enough to get you fired or not hired or discriminated against. They have to prove actual impairment on the job. Prop 19 is going to destroy drug testing for employment in the state of California. Furthermore, a lot of people go, oh, a 5x5 garden is so small and I only get to carry an ounce. Oh my goodness, it's only an ounce. There's a little part of this, if you dig down and check out my post at stash.normal.org, you can get the actual word-for-word part of the of Prop 19 that says this. It says that you're allowed to possess all of the harvests and products and production of your 5x5 garden on site. So if your 5x5 garden manages to produce a pound and a half, 2 pounds, 3 pounds of weed, you can have it at your house. And let's say you have your 5x5 garden for a long time, month after month after month after month after month, you'd start to accumulate a whole bunch of product from your harvest of your 5x5 garden, wouldn't you? Eventually, you might be sitting there with 10 pounds of marijuana in your house, and you could even get rid of your garden. If the cops came by and said, hey, what's this 10 pounds of weed? You could say, hey, that's the results from my 5x5 garden over the past year and a half. And they would have to accept that as personal use. And even if some DA decided he didn't want to accept it as personal use, there's another little portion of Prop 19 tucked away that creates an affirmative defense for any amount that you might be caught with that you can say is for personal use. Folks, this is a beautiful piece of legislation. Go online, stash.normal.org. Check out my word-for-word analysis, California Prop 19. It answers all your questions. And until
this
next time.
Normal Show Live, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Take care of each other, tokers.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.